I'm delighted to welcome a new supporting sponsor to the local government news roundup family. It's Ventia, a leading essential infrastructure services provider, redefining service excellence for communities across Australia and New Zealand. Ventia is operating at over 400 sites and with a large and diverse workforce of over 35,000. They specialise in the long-term operation, maintenance and management of critical public and private assets and infrastructure across a broad range of industry segments, including defence and social infrastructure, infrastructure services, telecommunications and transport. For local government, Ventia specialises in the end-to-end delivery of open space management, soft and hard facilities management, street cleansing, minor capital works and much more. Ventia brings capability in whole-of-life asset management and robust use of data for better decision-making for their clients. Ventia, making infrastructure work sustainably for our communities. Head to ventia.com to find out more. Coming up on the local government news roundup, Council CEO arrivals, departures and extensions across three states. I have the latest developments for you. A council in Melbourne's West responds to discovery of asbestos at a local playground. A new place naming policy set to stand at Vorborshire after a rescission motion fails to get the numbers. De-amalgamation on the agenda at a Sydney council, a controversial special council meeting in Alice Springs abandoned just minutes after it began, and the New Zealand government criticised for overreach into local government over the creation of Maori wards. Hello and welcome to the Local Government News Roundup, wherever you're listening, across Australia or around the world. It's great to have you with us. I'm Chris Eddy, and my thanks to the Victorian Local Governance Association, the national broadcaster on all things local government, and Davidson, the nationally recognised local government recruitment and business advisory service, for their support of the Local Government News Roundup. Major developments at the CEO level of councils in Victoria this week. The CEO of Strathbogie Shire Council, Julie Salomon, has resigned and will finish at the council in July. The news was first reported by the Euroa Gazette prior to the council releasing an official statement. Ms Salomon told the Gazette that she needs a break and plans to travel around Australia and see where life takes her. Administrator Peter Stevenson said, with Julie's resignation and organisational transition, it prompts us to focus on selecting the best candidates for the October local government election, as well as initiating the search for a new CEO. The resignation follows the dismissal of all Strathbogie councillors late last year and the appointment by the state government of Mr Stevenson as administrator until elections in October this year. East Gippsland Shire Council has appointed Fiona Weigle as its new Chief Executive Officer. The decision to appoint Ms. Weigle on a five-year contract was made at a meeting on Tuesday afternoon after a nationwide search. Ms. Weigle will formally start in the position on Monday. She's been acting in the position since January after former CEO Anthony Basford left to take up a director position at Greater Geelong City Council. Hindmarsh Shire Council has appointed Monica Revell as its new Chief Executive Officer. Ms. Revell has been acting CEO since late last year and has served as the Council's Director of Corporate and Community Services for 7 years. She will officially assume the position next Monday. Tests have confirmed the presence of asbestos in mulch at a reserve in Spotswood, leading to the closure of the playground there this week. Hobsons Bay City Council says it's working with a hygienist and the EPA to conduct remediation works at Donald McLean Reserve and to inspect other sites where the same mulch may have been used. The playground will only reopen once the mulch has been replaced and approved by the hygienist. A rescission motion at Vorborshire Council has failed to get the numbers to overturn a new place and feature naming policy. The policy, which was adopted by one vote in March, calls for 70% of options put forward for new road, place and landmark names to recognise women, in line with a similar state government strategy. The policy, which is believed to be a first for a regional council, will now stand after a 4-3 vote by the council saw the rescission motion defeated. Manningham Council is exploring potential development options for the former Doncaster Quarry to fund local services and infrastructure. The council has initiated an expression of interest process for the site's development, which could include the larger Manningham Depot Quarry precinct. The project aims to ensure financial sustainability, enhance economic growth, and improve local infrastructure. Kingston Council is in discussions with Launch Housing Limited to develop two vacant council-owned properties into social housing. The proposal, which will undergo further scrutiny and community consultation, involves constructing new homes and leasing the sites to Launch for 30 years. The initiative aligns with the 2020 Kingston Social and Affordable Housing Strategy to address increasing housing stress. Priority will be given to housing for women over 50 and single parents or carers with children. The City of Stonington has expressed deep sadness at the loss of former City of Prahran and City of Stonington Mayor and Councillor John Chandler OAM. Councillor Chandler was first elected to the former City of Prahran Council in 1982, serving as Mayor from 1988 to 1989. He became the first Mayor of Stonington in 1996, following the amalgamation of the former cities of Prahran and Malvern in 1994. And he served three terms in the mayoralty, including in 2006 and 7 and 2011-2012. He was awarded the Medal of the Order of Australia for service to local government and to the City of Stonington in the Australia Day Honours List in 2014. Valet John Chandler. An entertainment venue in the City of Stonington has pleaded guilty to charges of excessive music noise levels contravening a planning permit. Peachy Lopez Proprietary Limited, trading as Three Monkeys, was fined $750 and ordered to pay $8,000 in costs. Mayor Joe Gianfrido said the council conducts regular late-night inspections of entertainment venues to ensure residents are not being detrimentally affected by excessive music noise. Briefly in other Victorian news, key workers and employers in Timboon in Corangamite have until the 22nd of April to take advantage of preferential residential land sales before they go to the general market. The first eight blocks at Trestle Estate are priced between $176,000 and $236,500. The City of Ballarat is investing $4 million in its annual major patching and resurfacing program to repair sealed roads across the municipality. The program will improve 70 roads covering 44,000 square metres using crumbed rubber asphalt in a trial to promote sustainable practices. Moonee Valley City Council has welcomed a state government investment of over $20 million in five new kindergarten projects, creating up to 523 new kindergarten placements by 2028. The projects are part of the Building Blocks partnership with the council and will help meet the growing demand for kindergartens in Essendon, Keilor East, Ascot Vale and Airport West. And Wellington Shire Council says it was taken by surprise when its Facebook page was unexpectedly unpublished by Meta last week. The council said its page was not removed intentionally and was likely due to a Facebook update. It's been working with Meta to resolve the issue but has not yet achieved a resolution. You're listening to the Local Government News Roundup. It's Friday the 5th of April 2024 and this is episode number 319. The podcast is brought to you by the Victorian Local Governance Association, the national broadcaster on all things local government, and by Davidson, the nationally recognised recruitment and business advisory service. Let's look at some stories making news in the world of local government across Australia. In Sydney, Bayside Council will receive an in-house business case and financial model next month, exploring a potential de-amalgamation. A notice of motion from three councillors led to debate at last week's meeting over concerns about ongoing community discontent from the 2016 merger of Botany Bay and Rockdale councils. The St George and Sutherland Shire leader has reported that debate included the likely cost of developing a business case, with estimates ranging from $100,000 to $275,000. Randwick City Council is advocating for the power to limit the number of days properties can be used for non-hosted short-term rental accommodation in an effort to address the housing crisis. City Hub has reported on a council suggestion of a 90-day cap rather than the current 180-day limit and the removal of the 21-day consecutive booking provision. It's in response to concerns about the impact of short-term rentals on housing costs and availability. The council's recommendations also include the introduction of bed taxes and visitor levies as additional revenue sources. Lismore City Council says its housing grant program, launched in July last year, has so far spurred the development of 28 new affordable housing units. The program, funded from a $1.2 million pool from the federal government's Building Better Regional Cities program, offers $15,000 for each new dwelling that falls under six categories. The council also has initiatives to stimulate new affordable and diverse housing, including developer contribution discounts and deferrals, and partnerships to increase housing stock for target groups not served by the current housing market. In Queensland, Edwina Marks, the Chief Executive of Maranoa Regional Council, has announced her resignation, effective on the 17th of July. Her decision comes on the heels of a new council, including a new mayor, being declared following recent elections. A council spokesperson confirmed to the Courier-Mail that Ms. Marks's tenure would end later this year and that her decision is seen as routine to facilitate the change of council and ensure an orderly transition. A special meeting of Alice Springs Town Council, called to reject federal intervention in the Northern Territory, was abandoned shortly after it began this week. Councillor Kim Hopper had proposed a motion for the council to publicly state its commitment to the town's safety and prosperity and reject calls for a federal takeover of the NT government amid mounting concerns after recent rioting. However, Hopper withdrew her motion, stating it was the wrong time for the discussion. The NT News has reported that the special meeting was prompted by councillor concerns about not being consulted by Mayor Matt Patterson before making statements to the media during the crisis. Some stories out of South Australia for you. Adelaide City Council is backing the introduction of compulsory voting for council elections in South Australia, believing it could increase voter participation. The council's position is included in a submission to the Local Government Participation and Elections Review, which is examining voter engagement and diversity in council members after low voter turnout in the 2022 council elections. In Daily reported that the council has also debated eligibility for voting in council elections and has made suggestions to tighten application criteria for non-citizens. The District Council of Tumby Bay is exploring an interim solution to reopen the Tumby Bay jetty, which was closed due to severe weather damage in October 2022. Marine contractors and structural engineers will conduct selective load testing of the jetty to assess its load capacity, and if successful, further repairs will be made to reopen approximately two-thirds of the jetty for pedestrian use. The council has committed up to $150,000 towards the purchase of materials and consumables for the works. The announcement of an interim solution follows months of community angst, with the Mayor Jeff Churchett even receiving death threats over the closure of the jetty. The City of Mitcham has installed large battery energy storage systems at its Civic Centre and depot to reduce energy costs and carbon dioxide emissions. Each 280 kilowatt per hour battery, paired with a 100 kilowatt inverter, will store renewable energy during the day to power the buildings at night. The batteries will reduce emissions by 100 tonnes of CO2 annually, equivalent to the energy consumed by 13 homes in 1 year. The council says the cost of the batteries is equal to the anticipated bill savings, making them self-paying from the time of installation. Yet more CEO news to tell you about. Albury Council's CEO, Frank Zaknich, has secured a contract extension that will keep him in the position until 2027. That will mark over 14 years in the role. Mayor Kylie King told the Border Mail this week that the council's decision was based on recent performance reviews and the confidence expressed by the council in Mr. Zaknich's leadership. The CEO position at WA's Shire of Wiluna is open for applications. Chandler McLeod is handling the recruitment process to replace current CEO Gary Gaffney. The council was expected to appoint an acting CEO in a confidential session yesterday. Northern Territory's West Daly Regional Council has appointed John Thomas as its new CEO. Mr. Thomas has worked at McDonnell Regional Council and West Arnhem Regional Council and was recently CEO of DEMED Aboriginal Corporation. And the City of Mitcham has renewed its partnership with three other southern councils to tackle climate change over the next 5 years. The Resilient South Partnership aims to strengthen resilience against climate change in southern Adelaide with a focus on emissions reduction and climate change response planning. The other councils in the partnership are the cities of Marion, Onkaparinga and Holdfast Bay. The International Spotlight is just ahead, but first I just want to take a quick moment to thank you, the listener, for embracing what we're doing here with the local government news roundup in ever-increasing numbers, not just across Australia, but internationally as well. Looking at the listenership numbers from our last episode, we've had people in Canada, the United States, Fiji, Hong Kong, Germany and the United Kingdom listening in, and people in almost every state of Australia as well. Thank you so much for your ongoing support of the Roundup. We head across to New Zealand to start our international spotlight today. The New Zealand government's reversal of the ability of councils to decide on Maori wards has been criticised as an overreach by Local Government New Zealand. The decision would require councils that established the wards under the previous government's legislation to either scrap them or hold a new referendum. The results of the referendums would be binding from the 2028 local government term. Local Government New Zealand President Mayor Sam Broughton said the move undermines local decision-making and is imbalanced in how it disproportionately targets Maori representation, especially given that councils aren't required to hold a public referendum on any other wards or constituencies, such as rural ones. Wellington Mayor Tori Whanau has defended her council's introduction of the Maori ward and says that she has no plans to remove it, despite the government announcement. Whanau has questioned its compliance with the Crown's obligations to Maori under Te Tiriti. Auckland Mayor Wayne Brown's request for the government to pay rates on its properties in the region and return the GST charged on rates has been rejected by the Prime Minister. Brown has argued that this would benefit the city by more than $400 million a year, covering the city's annual deficit. However, the New Zealand Herald reported that Prime Minister Christopher Luxon has declined to grant the council's request while expressing openness to discussions about joint funding mechanisms for city and regional deals. An Auckland council manager is working remotely from the Gold Coast in Queensland due to personal circumstances under the council's flexible employment policies. The New Zealand Herald has reported on the arrangement, which began in January, is for 6 months and involves the staff member returning to Auckland regularly at their own expense. The council says this example is an exception rather than the norm, but that a review of offshore logins to the council's network during January and February show fewer than 10 staff working overseas for up to 2 months. In the UK, Leicester City Council has revealed that information was stolen when its servers were attacked by a known ransomware group last month, resulting in the publication of around 25 confidential documents online. The documents include rent statements and identification documents. The council is contacting those affected and said that while most systems are back to normal, members of the public are warned to be vigilant for any attempts to access their data. The incident is under investigation by the cyber crime team at Leicestershire Police and the UK National Cyber Security Centre. London's Mayor Sadiq Khan has announced plans to create 150,000 high-quality, well-paid jobs by 2028 in collaboration with local councils, businesses and trade unions. The Guardian reported this week that the job creation strategy includes focusing on small businesses, outer London and the central business district, to level up opportunities within the city. The plan aims to secure new investments for London, grow small and mid-sized businesses into larger companies, and attract new firms to the capital. There'll be initiatives also to help individuals from low-income backgrounds to access job markets through collaborations with private sector partners. And from the USA, the mayor of Cleveland, Ohio, Justin Bibb, has declined to sign a city council resolution calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, stating it did not adequately reflect his views. Mayor Bibb said he supports Israel's right to defend itself and the Biden-Harris administration's diplomatic efforts to end the conflict. He calls for a break in hostilities, the unconditional release of hostages by Hamas, and the provision of vital supplies to Gazans. By not signing the resolution rather than vetoing it, the mayor has avoided having to explain his objections to the council, which could have overridden a veto by 2/3 majority vote. Cleveland.com reported that the City Council passed the resolution unanimously last month after 17 weeks of protests and the attendance of hundreds of Palestine supporters at the public comment sessions at the Council's weekly meetings. And a new report has revealed that the representation of women on city councils in 15 large US cities has increased significantly since 2016. The review conducted by the Pew Charitable Trusts shows that six cities have majority female representation as of this year. The overall share of female representation on the 15 councils examined increased from 31% in 2016 to 47% in 2024. The review also looked at the remuneration of council members and found that average salaries increased by 27% since 2016, while the average tenure has decreased from 6.2 years in 2016 to 4.7 years. You can read more about the research at the website governing.com. And that wraps up another edition of the Local Government News Roundup. This episode, number 319, recorded on Friday, the 5th of April, 2024, and brought to you by the Victorian Local Governance Association with support from Davidson. You can find the links to the stories referenced in the episode and a full transcript at lgnewsroundup.com. While you're there, check out the latest breaking news updates and learn how you can support the Roundup by becoming a subscriber through a small monthly contribution, which you can cancel at any time. The Local Government News Roundup is recorded in the city of Greater Geelong, Victoria, on the land of the Wadawurrung people of the Kulin Nation. I'll be back soon with more local government news. Until then, thanks for listening and bye for now. The Local Government News Roundup is brought to you by the Victorian Local Governance Association. As Victorian councils go to elections later this year, the VLGA is ready to support communities and councils in good governance. A series of workshops has been designed to increase understanding of the local government sector, the work of councils, and the role of a councillor. Registrations are being taken now for workshops in May on standing for local government and local women leading change. And member councils should look out for the VLGA's 2024 Local Government Election Pre-Candidate Prospectus, available soon. Find out more about how the VLGA can support your council and community during this important time in the local government election cycle. Visit vlga.org.au.